The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We have found the proof that any team can beat any other team on any given day. Today on the Fox Footy Podcast, we are going to introduce the Circle of Parity via our own Max Lawton, as well as dissect all the big results and upcoming games on the Fox Footy Podcast. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and joined by the regular crew in the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Firstly, let's welcome definitely not an aspiring number one ticket holder at the Western Bulldogs, Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Thank you, Ben. Max, it's great to be here. Why the Western Bulldogs? Oh, no. Yeah. So you're referring to a little beef with Luke Beveridge, which actually doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, come on, Thomas.
I called Luke, we settled the score and everything's fine.
And he decided to stir the pot on the couch on Monday night.
We're not stirring the pot, just reporting the facts.
Just facts, Benny. We deal in facts here at Fox Footy.
Luke, nice to have you in the studio as well, Max Lawton.
Thank you, Benjamin Waterworth. Facts.
Yes, we're all about
it. We've got a bunch of them. We're going to tell them to you on the podcast.
No alternative facts in the Fox Footy podcast today. Let's start with our match committee big call, which can be a little alternative, it has to be said, though, at times. So a player that can be dropped slash picked ahead of this weekend's game, Maxie, starting with you.
This is a pretty easy one. He's in the best 22. Chris Scott said as much last night on AFL 360, but Asava Radigalea needs to come back in to Geelong's side. Patrick Danfield should never be in the ruck again. If he is, I don't know what I'll do because I don't really have anything to hand in. I've got my Dangerfield jumper over my chair at work, but that's a bit dirty over the shoulders now from having it for about 3 years. So just bring him in. I think he's very important to that team now structurally. Being that second ruck really does help out.
He was managed, as Chris Scott said last night.
Yes, so you understand it, but I would like to see him return. Although, I don't know how much we're going to talk about the Cats today, but geez, they love losing to a bad team, don't they?
They do. And around this time of the year as well.
It's just constant.
Between round 8 and round 10 over the past 3 seasons.
Yes, that really bad run last year. They lost 3 straight, including to Gold Coast and Collingwood. Yeah. So just really disappointing from them.
Thomas?
I'm going to go GWS this week. And I've got a double-barreled match committee, if that's okay. Do not bring in Jonathan Patton. He hasn't done enough to get back in. But the Giants should bring in Nick Shipley. He's 18 years old. He's in some reasonable kneeful form.
Yep.
If I look at his stats from the weekend, 27 touches, 4 tackles. They just need to give some of these young kids a go because at the moment their kneeful team is getting whacked. And you know what? So is their AFL team.
Was he the one who's from Western Sydney, born and bred?
A genuine Western Sydney prospect.
Yes.
The only problem was that against Geelong a couple of weeks ago on a Friday night, only had his first possession of the game deep into the last quarter.
That's why
I didn't play.
Got to get him back in now, otherwise he's going to have too much time to think about it. Must play. And the Giants, Leon Cameron can't afford to play the same team again. He's got to wield the axe now.
Well, speaking of the Giants, I'm fascinated to see where they sit on the power rankings this week, Maxie. In general, where a lot of teams sit, because it was an unpredictable round, considering West Coast beat Richmond, North Melbourne beat GWS, and Brisbane beat Hawthorn.
Well, weirdly, I feel like West Coast beating Richmond was one of the more predictable results.
I think West Coast.
A lot of people tipped it. I think we thought they were relatively even teams, and then playing at Optus Stadium was going to be key to that, and therefore West Coast getting the win. So they're number one in the power rankings.
Yep.
Would you agree they're actually the flag favourite, though?
No.
Not at this stage.
Based on home ground advantage?
I wasn't asked to submit my power rankings, Ben.
Well, you were, but you weren't there.
You're protesting live on air.
And I think it is disgraceful that West Coast is number one. Clearly, Richmond should still be the best team in the comp because it's based on who would win this week, I think, at a neutral venue. And I think Richmond would win anywhere else.
Well, that doesn't exist.
No, I know it doesn't.
Well China.
China. Yes. China.
Yes. Let's play the grand final in Shanghai. This is my platform.
China.
China.
Yeah. No, I'm surprised West Coast is number one, I've got to say.
You beat the team that's number one and you're number two. It makes
sense.
Yeah, I
know.
But I understand your point.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Geelong, the big move is down from 3 to 8.
Yeah, that's
plummeted.
That's surely just a
knee-jerk
shock reaction.
I can also tell you that Essendon moved from 18th to 12th. So this is a very emotion-based thing, the power rankings.
Experts, Max?
People in the office, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Julian De Stoop, unfortunately.
Oh, no wonder Essendon has made that jump thing.
Actually, he was one of the low men on Essendon.
There's no way Essendon should be 12th. I mean, I know they beat Geelong, but their form over a fair period of time now has been pretty abhorrent.
I would actually argue Essendon's fine, but I'm fine with Essendon being 12th. You look at that bottom seven. We talked about this last week, I think.
Are they?
We had a story on foxvideo.com.au about the bottom seven compared to the top 11. How there's a big gap forming. The bottom seven was 3-28 with one draw against the top 11 on the ladder. Essendon has two of those wins, beating Adelaide and Port. Mm. And now they've beaten Geelong as well. I would argue Essendon is the best of those teams. We thought they were the most talented. They just weren't playing like it. Mm. If they're actually going to start to figure something out, not that I want to start trusting them yet.
It is all about attitude with Essendon. So McDonald, Tip and Moody and Fantasia have four tackles in the first quarter. Smith has five tackles.
Zach Merritt's tackle early.
On Ablett. Yes. Mm. It just sets the tone, doesn't it? Jake Stringer, I think, you know, Anna Harrington's match report led on the Jake Stringer moment where he did a really team-orientated thing that led to a goal, and it all just flowed from there for the Bombers.
I'm really interested in the notion of effort versus effort in footy, because everyone says after a game, yeah, we tried hard, but there is actually one level of effort, then there's a whole nother level of effort when it means a little bit more. And this season is exemplifying that perfectly, because what you have is teams rebounding after losses, with the theory we talk about, and they are absolutely at the very height of their powers in those games and trying way harder than the opposition.
Well, you think about it in your everyday life. You are trying at work, but there's me trying Sunday night at 11 p.m. on a homepage shift, Benny.
Yes.
And then there's me trying properly during the grand final, for example, for our live coverage.
I mean, the very best teams have that 100% effort from 100% of the players 100% of the time every week.
And a shout out to all those readers who are reading foxsports.com at 11 p.m. on a Sunday night following the Ducati disaster, the MotoGP, things like that. But speaking of theorems, and we mentioned beforehand that the circle of parity, and you profiled this on your homepage shift on Sunday night,
yes, I did.
Maxi, you found some interesting, an interesting chain of results.
Well, what is the circle of parity?
So credit to the guys on Reddit, Triple Wave, for one of these guys who designed these graphics, and I'll put that in the story, so go check out his work. It's very pretty. Essentially, every team, now that every team has a win and a loss, you can draw a circle where every team has lost to the team before it, and it uses every team in that loop. In fact, there are about 81 of those loops available now based on the crazy results we've had. So, for example, let me read to you the circle of parity that was used in our story.
Yes, and this was completed after Brisbane beat Hawthorn on Sunday afternoon.
Yes. Adelaide defeated Richmond, who defeated Melbourne, who defeated North Melbourne, who defeated Sydney, who defeated West Coast, who defeated the Bulldogs, who defeated Gold Coast, who defeated Carlton, who defeated Essendon, who defeated Port Adelaide, who defeated Fremantle, who defeated St Kilda, who defeated Brisbane, who defeated Hawthorn, who defeated Geelong, who defeated GWS, who defeated Collingwood, who defeated Adelaide.
That's a big circle. So my question to you is, does it automatically occur as soon as everyone wins a game, the circle of parity?
I don't know that it's necessarily the case, because you could have exclusive matchups where teams haven't played opponents and stuff like that. It has been completed as early as round 4 or 5 in a season, so I would imagine it's very tough to do it without completing a circle. But it just shows anyone technically can beat anyone. If you want to say, hey, my team's better than your team, you can go back a few results and proof it out.
Is that of your belief as well, Thomas?
Well, anyone can beat anyone. I still am of the belief there's one or two teams at the top, and probably three or four now at the bottom, and then a big glut of teams in the middle that literally just depends what day it is, who wins those games.
Which I think we saw with Geelong dropping from 3rd to 8th in the power rankings.
That's
fair enough.
Other interesting notes to come out of the power rankings, Maxi?
I just love the way he went like that. That was unbelievable. It was like you press fast forward and just mention all the teams.
That was my audition for Sky Racing. I hope you enjoyed it. The other thing that was interesting to me was actually the margins this round. I think we might have talked about this in the power rankings a little bit, but this was the round with the biggest, smallest winning margin.
Yes.
Credit to Sir Swamp Thing on Twitter for this one. I said that name in the office yesterday to Nearly Meadows, and she laughed in my face.
Yes.
Saying Sir Swamp Thing.
Yeah, disappointing.
Swamp's a great tweeter.
A pillar of the stats community.
Yes, he is.
Do you guys catch up for coffee?
Over Twitter, probably. Is that how that works?
Direct messaging.
They catch up and play checkers.
Yeah. I said that I liked him using the phrase biggest, smallest. But essentially what that means is, so Collingwood's win over St Kilda was by about 27 points. Mm. That was the smallest winning margin of the round, which is the biggest, smallest winning margin of the round since 1992, round 8 or so.
So very one-sided round.
I was barely
round.
Alive.
But considering that Brisbane beat Hawthorn, North Melbourne beat GWS, West Coast beat Richmond, Essendon beats Geelong, and that Collingwood St Kilda result is the closest to the round, that is remarkable.
All by 5 goals plus.
Yes.
Crazy. Yeah, it's amazing. I really like that stat, actually, but it's a little bit misleading because, as you indicated just then, it makes it seem like it was a very predictable one-sided round. Mm. It might have been somewhat one-sided, but it was far from predictable, and that's what's making footy so entertaining at the moment, the fact that anyone can actually beat anyone on any given day. Very hard to tip at the moment, Benny.
It is very hard to tip. I think a lot of people, though, Thomas, would have tipped Melbourne to defeat Carlton
on
Sunday. I'm sure you
very
would
brave.
Have. You went along with it with the family, didn't you?
I did with my granddad's 86th. Happy birthday to Clive Morris.
Oh, yes. I saw him on your Instagram story, I think it was.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what Instagram is, but he was on the story.
Were you in the MCC members?
We're in the MCC dining hall. Yes, we were. It was very good.
I saw you wearing a tie there. That is wankerish as it gets.
Thanks,
okay.
Ben. Yeah, wearing a tie all of a sudden is out of fashion. The 109 points
at the footy.
Biggest winning margin for Melbourne, what, since 1993?
Yes, and the biggest ever over Carlton.
And the first 100-point margin for a win since 04, when Cameron Bruce kicked 7. And in that time, yes, Melbourne's lost by 100 points 9 times. So it's been a long time between drinks, Ben. It was
Ben, I asked Tom yesterday, were you at that game in 2004 when they won by 105? Oh, yes. Cameron,
I was there. 04. I was in year 7 and Cameron Bruce with blonde tips.
Tips, yes, of course. 2 years before, he's in his Brownlow medal form briefly.
Very briefly until Brent Guerra dug him in. And Brent Guerra might have got weeks for that now, actually.
He probably would
have. Retrospectively, he should have got 3 weeks. Well, no, it was a one-sided game.
It was.
But at halftime, you thought Carlton were just hanging in there, and then Melbourne went bang in the second half, and even a spray from Brendan Bolton.
It's a fierce spray, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I like that, but it didn't seem to jolt his team into action. They're just not good enough at the moment.
So Carlton was the story, if you look at the chain of story from a media perspective, Carlton was the story. But is this a fact, Maxie? I'm going to go from an objective viewpoint here first.
As opposed to me?
Yes. Are Melbourne a 100-point better side than Carlton at the moment? Are Melbourne that good?
I don't know that any team is naturally a 100-point better side than another team.
Gosh, they're playing well. They're playing well. I
think what's good about Melbourne's form right now is they're showing that killer instinct that you want to see from a really good team.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks in a row now against Gold Coast and Carlton, they've just put away
They're hammering the nail in.
When you don't need to. You know, you could easily put your foot off the pedal in the fourth quarter in those games, but they completely smash them instead.
Yeah, it's also symptomatic of mid-season games, I think. I think by this time of the year, teams, once they're out of the game, can really drop off.
So we've hit that already at round 9.
Yeah, I think from round 8, from the first 2 months onwards, I think that's what happens, especially for teams that can't play finals. Carlton are very, well, I say they're inexperienced. They were older than Melbourne on the weekend, which prompted Jared Waitley on AFL 360 to really question where they're at. They're not as young as what they're saying. They're not as inexperienced as what they're saying. Yes, they have inexperienced players, but they're not babies. They're not as young as the Bulldogs, for example. And on the weekend, Melbourne was younger than Carlton.
Mm. Well, that's because Carlton stuffed up their rebuild. We know this. We saw this years ago when, in the last years under Mick Malthouse, when they were still trying to win flags when he couldn't see them losing a game.
So why are they still recruiting on the off-season just gone players like Cameron O'Shea and Aaron Mullis?
Because you've got to play someone.
They're just trying to hold on as much as they can. But the reality is they need their kids to come on. And some of the kids have come on. Some of them really haven't come on at all.
It's almost like they're recruiting like a baseball team. So in baseball, in the MLB, if you recruit some maybe players who are a bit out of favour, had some poor seasons, they have a really good start to the year. You trade them halfway through the season, you get a draft pick back, you get another player back, you get some salary cap relief. It makes a lot of sense. That's how you rebuild. You make these assets, get them to improve, and then trade them out and take the gains. You can afford to give those players games. Carlton can do that, but they don't get anything from them. Mm. Cam O'Shea isn't going to impress anyone and then get traded for a second-round draft pick. Yeah. Because that's not how the AFL works. It could, though.
I'm not complaining that Carlton aren't playing 163 games a year like the Los Angeles Dodgers, though.
No, that would be a little bit exhausting to watch for even fans.
Just from a Melbourne perspective. So in the last 4 weeks, we have to remember, though, that they've played Essendon, St Kilda, Gold Coast and Carlton.
Yeah, poor teams, but something Melbourne hasn't done in the past is bury the bad teams. These have been banana peel games for Melbourne in the past.
Carlton last year.
So I don't think it showed. Yeah, it's Carlton last year, and there's plenty of other examples over the past decade. Mm. But it doesn't mean they're premiership favourites or even top four fancies. But what it does show is that they are definite finals team at the moment.
Yeah. You could look at their fixture a month ago, and we did this when I think I read about them in the power rankings. They were 2-3. They're going to win their next 4. They're going to be 6-3. They're going to go into a game against Adelaide where they need to win to prove to someone, to everyone really, that they are as good of a team as we think they are based on their record.
And it is at a neutral venue as well.
There you go.
Alice Springs.
The D's have won 14 quarters in a row, which is the most in their history.
Yep.
Their recent form is they've done everything required of them in the past month.
Yes.
Now, what does it mean going forward? Well, I think it means they know they can bury teams below them rather than treat those games as real danger matches.
Yeah, so they've got Adelaide next coming up, then the Bulldogs, Collingwood, then the bye, and then Port away on a Friday night.
It's harder and harder.
Yeah, so it's hard over the next month. I reckon of those 4 games, the Bulldogs, I think you could probably pencil that one in, but there's 50-50 games. Like the Queen's birthday
that's
game against Collingwood, that's turning into a really, really tantalising matchup. And then Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. That is tough. So I reckon the next month we'll find out a lot about the D's. But then after that, they've got St Kilda, Fremantle and the Bulldogs, again, that time at the MCG. So 3 very winnable games after that.
They needed to bank these games. It was very important they got ahead of the ledger. But I think one of the, and I think we saw it with Richmond last year in the middle of the season when they had quite an easy draw and they beat some really low teams by a lot. It can really help you.
Yeah.
A lot of, I think some people think that smashing low teams can give you a false sense of security. Look, it can, but I think for the Demons, it actually beds down their game plan. It gives them confidence that they can score heavily and defend really well. And it also gives them much-needed percentage, which could be crucial at the end of the year when final spots come up for grabs. And Melbourne knows that more than anyone.
Yes. Can we go through their fixture and see if we can get them to 12? I've got it here.
Yep.
So do you want to get them to 12 wins? That generally gets you in.
They should win more than 12 games now. They've won six, haven't they?
So they're on six. Yeah. Adelaide.
50-50.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Well,
I'd say no.
I'd say yes.
Let's say, okay, 50-50. So 6.5. Bulldogs.
Win.
Yes.
I'll say they're on seven. Collingwood.
Yeah. Win.
Eight. Port Adelaide.
Let's put loss. That as a loss.
Loss.
Eight. St Kilda.
Win.
Nine. Fremantle.
Win.
10. Bulldogs.
Win.
11.
Win.
Geelong at GMHBA.
Probably
loss.
Not.
Loss.
Adelaide at Adelaide Oval.
Probably not.
Loss.
Gold Coast.
Win.
At the MCG,
so
yes.
They're at 12 wins by round 20.
Yep.
Then Sydney at the MCG.
Gee, they're a chance there. I think.
West Coast at Optus Stadium. No. GWS at the MCG.
Win.
I think we're getting them to 13 just.
Which what? Finished with 13 this year?
You finished 5th to 8th.
Yep. And that's probably where they are at.
And if, that's where they're at.
And if you pinch one or two of those games where they're 50-50s, you can get into the top
But
four.
I've always
get
said...
Get excited, Thomas.
I've always said, though, about the Demons this year, it's a prerequisite they make the finals. They need to win a final.
Yeah.
Last year, they should have made it. This year, they need to win a final to take a step forward. Yep. If they don't win a final, I think it's an unsuccessful season.
I think that is a very fair call from you, Thomas. And speaking of fair, let's go on to Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
It's Fair or Farce. Yeah.
Good intro for Maxi. I'll go to you first, Max, as the best international traveller in this podcast. Fair or Farce?
Probably
AFL,
fair.
Is it? AFL in China is a pipe dream that will never take off.
I'm closer to fair than fast on that.
Yes?
I mean,
give us a percentage. How close are you?
Close to... I mean, I'm probably 70-30. Yeah. I think every business in the world that can export its product, including sports, including professional wrestling, anything, looks at China and thinks, oh, look at all those people. We could just get a percent of those and be billionaires. And I think they're all probably wrong. Because that's how it works. They think, oh, we can get a million fans in China of their 1.5 billion or whatever, and we're rich.
So the stat that I was told yesterday by Jared Healy was that the crowd in Shanghai was like the equivalent of having 180 people at the MCG for Anzac Day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because 10,000 people, quote unquote. Yeah. You get that to surely anything in China. You get that to an esports tournament for sure.
Jared's the kind of guy who would go and work that out as well, wouldn't he?
Yeah, or he'd work out the decimal points and everything. Ben, you. Brendan Bolton is more vulnerable because of the rolling contract he's on. Fair or fast?
Yes, I think that's probably fair. I like the rolling contract style, though. I wish more coaches would go to it.
It stops the bi-yearly pressure, doesn't it?
Yes.
It does, but it also can heap the pressure on him as well. I think what's saving Brendan Bolton a little bit at the moment is that the discussion is around the list build, what you mentioned before, Maxi. And a lot of the clean out, the huge list turnover that we've seen over the past couple of years, I think no doubt has had some Bolton influence, but also a lot of Stephen Silvani influence as well. So that's probably what's saving him from the heat at the moment. But if we fast forward 12 months and things haven't changed, I think it'd be a different story.
Weirdly, if we're in a situation where Bolton's like, you are contracted till the end of 2019, everyone's looking at that and a deadline. Same thing with sort of Alan Richardson sort of situation. Whereas year by year, it's just like, well, he's always there, so you can't really put the pressure on him.
I think the list discussion is probably what's saving him at the moment.
I agree. Yes. But I think regardless of what contract any coach is on, they can always be sacked.
Absolutely.
And the payout, the clubs just deal with it.
That's
really
right.
To you, Max, and this is from Twitter, thanks to HL Callahan1.
Ooh.
It's great to have social media fair or fast contributors.
Yes.
Fair or fast, Max. West Coast win over Richmond at Optus Stadium and does nothing to improve their flag chances. Fair or fast?
Nothing fast.
Yeah.
It improves it by 1%.
Yeah.
I said this as much last week. I think that we're going to learn very little if West Coast beats Richmond there because it is a home game and it is not where the grand final is played. And there is very clearly a home field advantage to the grand final, having it at the MCG, even if you have slightly less of it because it's more of a neutral fan base than home fans.
Yeah. 1% is harsh, I think. They know they can do it now. regardless of the ground.
So the second part of that fair or fast question that came in from Harrison off Twitter, is there any suggestion from yesterday's game, Sunday's game, that indicates the Eagles can win big games or finals at the MCG?
I need to see it still.
Yeah.
So last time we saw it at the MCG, they beat Carlton by 2 goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's keep that in mind. Yes, maybe 1% is harsh. We saw that West Coast can do it. They did. Jack Darlington used to be one of the best players in the comp, which is a ridiculous sentence to say, all of this stuff, but you still need to see it in the situation where it actually matters.
Fair or fast, Ben, as we sit here right now in the Fox Footy bunker,
yes,
Jordan Ngoi is in the top 3 most valuable forwards in the AFL. Fair or fast?
Fast. Oof. I don't think he's that high up.
Where would you rank him then?
He's in the top 10. I think probably towards the bottom of the top 10. But he's kicked. So he's kicked 5 goals against Brisbane and he's kicked 6 goals against St Kilda.
Look at that opposition.
Yes. You've got to look at the opposition. And he's kicked 1 goal in every other game he's played so far this year. So he's consistent. He's contributing on the scoreboard. I'd like to see it on Queen's birthday against Melbourne. I'd like to see him have a big game then. This Paul Roos said on the couch last night, because there's talk about Dugowie's contract, he's out of contract at the end of the year. He goes, gee, I'd like to be a player today because you don't have to do much to get an $800,000 a year contract.
6 goals isn't doing much.
Yeah,
I love watching him play at the moment.
He's a great player, and he's going to be in demand, I think, at the end of the year. Yeah. But I wouldn't put him in the top 3 forwards, valuable forwards at the moment.
Who would you put in the top 3 valuable forwards?
Oh, I think Franklin's still up there.
And
I think Jack Darling's probably a guy who's usurped Dugowie, if they're
Ben Brown,
the same. And probably Ben Brown. Yes,
interesting. I think Tom Donald is right up in that conversation as well.
I agree.
Max, question for you. I love this because this is completely impulse, and Max will have to answer this without even knowing what's going to come.
I love this, says Tom, about his own creation.
Yeah. Fair or fast? Hannah Mounsey should be allowed to play AFLW in 2019.
Fair. I don't know the science behind all of this, and I think there is more going on than a lot of people think in terms of testosterone levels and all that stuff. Her testosterone levels are lower than most female players.
The average, yes.
But
that's only one measurement, though, isn't it?
My understanding is that, and someone will correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure, is that the measurement that the Olympics use was sort of just plucked out of thin air. It's no science to that. It's like, oh, let's just put it at this level and that's where you need to be. I think she should play because she is a woman and it's the woman's competition. But I understand the argument of she's had all this time to develop herself as a body when she was a
male, yes.
I understand that. But also, she's not that skilled.
No.
We've had people, Anna Harrington went to some of her games this season and said that, you know, she can stand in the forward line and be incredibly powerful and get a mark and kick a goal. She got a booming kick, but she's not skillful.
Yeah. And to add to that, Sarah spoke to Hannah for foxfooty.com.au last week, and Hannah was honest about that and said that she doesn't even have the pace to keep up with a lot of players. Maybe if the ball was kicked to her one-on-one, she might have that size advantage. But in general, AFLW, you look at the AFLW, a lot of it is about speed and skill.
So much crumbing.
That's right. So I think she's not necessarily going to be. If she does play AFLW next year, she's certainly not going to be the best player in the competition.
Would it be unfair to compare her to, say, someone like Sarah Perkins, who has a bit of size to her advantage, also a bit of speed, but dropped off a little bit in her second season?
Yeah.
Maybe his team started to figure out how to play her.
Potentially, but Perkins played in the midfield quite a fair bit.
Yeah, that's true, which is Hannah.
Perkins actually got a decent tank.
Okay.
Well answered, Max. Nicely done. Ben, on a delicate issue, of course. Ben, fair or fast, last one. You are already looking forward to round 17, Friday night, Carlton versus St Kilda. Fair or fast?
Could be the most farcical fair or fast question I think I've ever heard, Thomas. Yes. That is going to be a dour affair.
Should the AFL change it?
Yes.
Oh, they should, but
who else is playing round 17?
Yeah, that's probably the question. But also, this has been locked in for quite some time. Clubs have locked this in. Broadcasters have locked this in. This is very much unlike the Brendan Bolton coach contract scenario, this is very much locked in, I think, at this stage. There's not a lot of fluidity.
My gut reaction was yes. Mm. But when you actually think about this issue,
logistically,
having a floating fixture, like you can have it in the NFL because the games they're moving are from Sunday in the afternoon to Sunday night.
We have it here around 23. So why can't we have it more?
A month before.
Yeah, and this is a month out. This is longer than a month out.
Because you have the rest of the fixture locked in and you're still having to, if you're having to do a straight swap, that's harder than having to lock in an entire fixture.
I think there's still a way around it.
How would Carlton St Kilda feel about that if they were taken off Friday night footy?
they would feel terrible about it.
Yeah.
But hey, stop being such a terrible team to watch. Probably, you know, yeah. Like, it's ridiculous that Carlton have this many Friday night games, and it's ridiculous that St Kilda at the moment have any. I can understand why they might have one for the year, and there is a clear financial bonus for when you have a Friday night game. But if you're not playing good enough footy, you actually don't deserve it. You shouldn't get charity in this league. Just like Brisbane don't have any Friday night games, they're playing a lot more entertaining footy than St Kilda or Carlton or even Essendon at the moment.
Tom is touching the side screen, show back to our style and steaming it off.
Anyway, that's in a fair or fast, Max.
Da-da-da.
Well done, Thomas. A nice edition of Fair or Fast. Now, we mentioned West Coast and Richmond just beforehand, and it was a fantastic occasion for all West Coast Eagles fans out at Optus Stadium. And a man who was there live and doing a wonderful job on the boundary was former St Kilda and North Melbourne star midfielder Nick Dal Santo. Hello, Dal.
Thank you very much. How are we all?
We're well, mate.
Wonderful.
We're really, really well. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Firstly, what was, to you, sitting boundary side there at Optus Stadium, what was the most impressive thing about the Eagles' performance against the Tigers on the weekend?
I think their ball movement stood out to me, and that goes back to the planning and then obviously the execution and the way that the Eagles went about it. Went into this game with huge expectations of, you know, obviously the 1v2, the new stadium over there, how are the Tigers going to travel? But the other bit that I was really interested to see how it played out was, we know that the Tigers have got this premiership winning, particularly their forward line, you know, very small against a really tall Eagles defence. I was really excited to see how different styles were going to play out against each other. Mm. The other one that I was interested in was the premiership ruck duo in Nankervis and Grigg versus two genuine ruckmen that the West Coast Eagles have in Lysette and obviously Natanui. So they were completely different styles in different parts of the ground. I think, overall, I still think it was a fantastic game. I think the scoreboard probably blew it out a little bit and it looked very comfortable, and it was in the end for the Eagles. But it was just a great spectacle and a great way to finish off that round of football.
Dal, we asked it in our segment just before Fair or Fast. I want your thoughts. Does this game mean anything ahead of September, or do you think it's more just a blip on Richmond's radar and they will feel as if they understand West Coast style more now and potentially are more likely to beat them down the track than what they were before this weekend?
I think a combination of both, Tommy. I mean, it depends obviously how you look at it, and I spoke to a couple of Tigers post the game as well, and I think when you've been to the top, and they were last year, it also puts into it puts everything else into proportion as well in regards to the 22 round robin games.
Yep.
So what I mean by that is, if you deal with it the right way, then it's okay. You learn it, you take it as a learning experience, and it just wasn't their day. I mean, the Eagles were fantastic, and they all gave credit to the Eagles. They said they were super. Their pressure, particularly in that third quarter, when, you know, led by Elliot Yeo, who comes back onto the field after hurting his knee in the first quarter and just basically dominates that third quarter. So I think if the Tigers take it in the right manner, and I'm sure that they will, they'll be able to learn from this. I don't think it's a little blip, and now this is the second time that they've been beaten. They lost, I think, round two to Adelaide in a similar fashion, in that the Eagles were holding their forwards. In round two, the Crows were holding their forwards, found a way to get through the Alex Reins, you know, rolling off and really supporting his defensive teammates. But I think they'll learn from it. I mean, I don't reckon you take that game and say, oh, no, we're in trouble, someone's worked us out. I think you take it as, okay, they've worked us out a little bit. Now we need to keep tweaking our game and get ready for when we see them again later in the year.
Dal, you sort of touched on the talls v small situation they had with the matchups between these two teams.
Yep.
There's been a lot of talk about Richmond's small forward line. Basically, everyone thinking, well, that's how everyone's got to play now. That's the only way to win a premiership. Do you think that's sort of been overblown a little bit, and West Coast has shown how good you can still be if you have those really good talls?
Yeah, it's spot on, Maxie. And that's what I did like about it, that, well, I mean, we've done to death the Richmond forward line. Everybody in the league and every opposition club analyses every other club's, you know, probably even more than we do. And, you know, and it's our job and we love doing it. But this is all these clubs do. So Richmond fly over. We know exactly, or the opposition knows exactly what they're going to do ball movement wise, the way that they want to structure up. They know every stoppage structure, but they keep doing it. So what the Tigers base is saying is, this is what we do. How are you going to stop us? Yet the Eagles have gone into this game saying the exact same thing, but from a tall point of view. We're tall. We're overly tall in our back half. We've got intercept markers. I think their smallest defender on the weekend, the Eagles, was 6'2" in the old style, so about 187. and you look at the Tigers' small forward line, they're around the 178, 180 centimetre mark, so that's under 6 foot. But I love the contrasting styles, and what I did respect from the Richmond last year, let's go back one step, was that was their style, and everybody else was doing something different. Now you feel like everybody has to catch up to Richmond, but we're just starting to see different styles competing against each other. The Crows have still got a really dominant forward line, in my opinion, with two or three talls in there, and then obviously you get Eddie Betts at ground level. Well, they've even got four talls, to be honest, when you include Tom Lynch as well. But now we're starting to see individual styles of different footy clubs going up against whatever the opposition dishes up, and you sort of get to see who wins and how that game plays out.
Dale, before Sunday, could you see Adam Simpson and Shannon Hearn holding the Premiership Cup aloft? And if not, or if so, can you see that now?
It's a great question. No, I definitely couldn't see it before the year, Tommy, I need to admit.
Before Sunday, as in before, just before round nine.
Yeah, but even at the start of the year, I couldn't see it anywhere near. Like 6 months ago, no chance.
Yep.
3 days ago, probably not, to be completely honest again. I thought they could still win that game on the weekend, but I didn't think they were as good as they were. Let's put it like that. I didn't think they were going to do to the Tigers what they did. Still thought they could win, but not in that fashion. Let's fast forward now 3 months. Can I see it? Yes, I can now. If they play that style of football, and the question that everyone says, and being in WA for 24 hours, they're not happy with the way that we speak about the Eagles travelling and the disrespect about them playing at the MCG and Etihad Stadium. But if they play a similar brand to that, they are as good as anybody in the comp.
Well, so with all of that said, do the Eagles have a flaw? And if so, is it exposable?
They do have a flaw. Everybody does. And it's just dependent on whatever day that you play the opposition as well. So you need to take that into account. I'm just going to hold a little bit on them in regard to that travel factor still. I know they won a couple of games in Melbourne. I think they've beaten Carlton and the Western Bulldogs.
Yep.
Off the top of my head. Yes, they won in Adelaide. Yes, they won in Sydney 2 weeks ago now. But we all know the big challenge is the MCG. And the big challenge is in September. And the only reason, I guess, I feel like this, and a lot of people do, is it goes on history and it goes on evidence that you've seen in the past. And unfortunately with the Eagles, the evidence that we've seen in the past isn't great. So until you sort of feel enough confidence to say they can do this anywhere, you sort of feel like you've got to just protect yourself a little bit. Do they have flaws? Yes, because on a particular day, those talls may not be as dominant as they are in the air. The ball may be on the ground a little bit more, and then all of a sudden you're looking saying, geez, they're a little bit top-heavy. But as I said, if you go on what I saw on Sunday and they play a similar brand to that, then they'll be right up there.
Dale, I want to ask you about St Kilda. We know that you had a very distinguished career there and then spent the last couple of your seasons of your career at North Melbourne. But you were part of this, I guess, transformation of the list, whereby they were looking ahead to 2018 and trying to rebuild on the run with Scott Waters and Alan Richardson. Where is the list at now? And how do you see the club getting out of this hole they're in?
Gee, there's some really tough questions, Tommy, to be completely honest. And I mean that in a respectful way.
Yeah, yeah.
There's never a simple answer. And the way that they're playing their football at the moment, I couldn't imagine Alan Richardson on a Monday morning when they do their game review ever putting up one thing or one item saying, guys, this was our issue on the weekend. It's never the one thing. It could be up to 20 things. You know, this happened twice, that happened twice. And when you add it all together, you're losing, you know, 8 out of 9 games. That's how serious it is.
Yeah.
What do they need to change? Once again, it comes down to individuals in particular parts. And it's a team sport, but individuals need to take responsibility, one, for their own form. Because when you get guys not playing to their capacity, you only have to be a little bit off as a whole team to be losing games. And that's what's happening at the moment, in my opinion. But they've got guys severely out of form. So then, therefore, those losses are a lot more.
And did they get it? Yeah, sorry, go on.
I think that individuals need to get better. I've questioned at times the structure, and I'm not a huge structure man, but in my opinion, what structure does is it puts players in positions to show what they're really good at AFL level. I mean, there's a reason that you draft certain players because they're really good at something. And I've just been frustrated at times that I don't think those players are in their best positions to show what they can do and, you know, potentially win games of football almost off their own boot.
Yeah.
But I think little bits here and a little bit there, I think it can turn quickly, and that's me being optimistic as well. But there's so many little things. You know, the effort at times I don't think has been at AFL standard or at St Kilda's level. I go back 2 weeks ago when they played Fremantle in the West. That third quarter to me stood out. But unfortunately, it stood out because that was a maximum effort and everything else just sort of felt a little bit less than that. But I'm going to try and be optimistic. It can turn around. Finals are out of the question this year. But just a way to build and get ready. Feels weird. Get ready for next year already. Yeah, you've got to find little things along the way.
Yeah. I just wonder, I'm looking at it now, I'm just wondering whether they got it wrong with Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagne, especially Lee Montagne, because I think they need someone who can kick behind the ball. And at halfback, I still think he had a lot more to offer. I know we're all coming at it, I guess, from a biased perspective a little bit with Lee Montagne. I know you're good friends with him. But it just seems to me like they thought they had players that could replace these guys, and they just don't. It takes a lot of work to replace a Montagne and a Riewoldt in a team like St Kilda.
Totally agree, Tommy. And my take is that was the messaging as well, that these guys had to move on to let these other younger players, one, get their opportunity to play football and get enough games into them. So, you know, this year or next year, they played 40, 50 games and then they're, you know, ready to play AFL football consistently week to week. My take last year, so let's go back 12 months, my take was I couldn't see a reason why Riewoldt and Montagne both couldn't be there. So the simple reason is they didn't have to play every game, but what they would bring to that football club and those younger players Monday to Friday would be the biggest difference. And now what we've seen, I guess, from Luke Hodge, I would have loved to have seen Rui and Joey do what Luke Hodge is doing this year.
Yep.
So play a role, absolutely play a role. Don't hold anybody back. And I don't think they were, and I don't think they would be this year. But just be there as a sounding board and even be up front with Rui and Joey, you know, in the preseason and say, guys, you're going to play 12 games this year. You're going to play 15 games, but I need you Monday to Friday. Your biggest role is to get this group ready for when you're not here. And I felt like they'd been doing that anyway, but they're obviously playing week in, week out. But I felt like they were building this group and supporting this group. Jarryn Geary is captain, but I just felt there was an opportunity for them to be there and just hold this club in good stead, particularly at times like that they're going through right now.
Ben,
I mean, this is where you need strong leaders. This is where you need great communication with the coach, with all the coaches, assistant coaches, about the game plan, about the way that the game's played, about how you feel on the factory floor. You know, we're out here, coach. This is what we're feeling. We don't like this. We love this part. Let's work together to get this going forward, because at the moment, it just looks very stagnated.
Ben, it's one of the biggest myths in football, I reckon, that players should retire when they're on top. Matthew Pavlich retired when he was absolutely cooked. There was nothing left in the tank. He didn't play great footy in his last year. But don't tell me that his last 12 months at Fremantle didn't help a lot of the young kids coming through.
No,
and we still remember him like the star he was. So even if Nick Riewoldt limps towards the finish line and Lee Montagne limps over the finish line, we still remember them for being stars and they help the young guys coming through.
Well, for Rui, he was limping for the last 10 years.
And he would tell you that as well, I'm sure, Dal.
I reckon you're selling sort of a number 26 off halfback for St Kilda. Might have gone okay, I think, behind the ball, I reckon.
Well, got him back.
Yes, could have got him back.
No. Well, I never limped because I wasn't quick enough to even build up a limp, unfortunately. But it's a really tough one, guys. And there's always clubs going through it. But I feel like as an industry, being AFL football, we're very quick to move guys on. And then just what you said then, Tommy, about, you know, you've got to go out at the top and you've got to do this and you've got to do that. But I believe there's even a greater role for senior players, experienced players, to help during the week. And what that looks like can be different for everybody. But then, and I'll reference Luke Hodge, the kudos that he's received this week already for getting this group ready. Dane Beams's father has passed away, that, you know, he's been out of the club for periods of time. So Luke Hodges filled in as a leadership role. That there's huge, huge advantages for having someone like a Luke Hodge or a Riewoldt or a Montagne for the culture, for the standards, for the trademarks and everything that you, you know, the way you want to live your life, the way that you want to go about your football, that holds the club in good stead more than just you holding on to seen you play for 12 more months.
Dell, absolutely loved your passion on the Fox Footy podcast today. We're going to see more of that on the Lowdown, the weekend Lowdown with Sez and the crew on Thursday night. And then you're riding the boundary for the big game on Saturday afternoon for the game between Richmond and St Kilda, which will be must-watch telly. Thanks for your time on the Fox Footy podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys. Love the podcast.
Thank you very much to Nick Dal Santo joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. We touched on a little bit about the Saints there, Thomas, but where are we? And we mentioned them in Fair or Fast as well about, you know, potentially taking a Friday night game off them against Carlton. Mm. But Alan Richardson was grilled by Jared Waitley and Robbo on 360 last night. Is the pressure starting to come on him?
Oh, the pressure's been on him for a while now, and every loss, it escalates further. They could easily be, I don't know, 2-14 2.5-14. I know they've won 1.5 games. But Alan, the effort seems to be somewhat there. They're actually not rolling over. They were against Collingwood. They just
but
can't
they're
kick.
They're big margins, though. They're losing by significant margins.
Yeah, I wonder.
I actually had a point about the margin. So one of the main things that Richo kept saying on 360 was about consistency. He wants to see consistency. Yeah. St Kilda's the most consistent side in the comp. They're consistently crap.
Yeah.
Their margins have been between...
It is true.
Their margins have been within a two-goal span between about 27 and 39 points for four straight games, with them kicking between 7 and 10 goals. You know exactly what you're going to get from St Kilda right now, and it's a performance where they lose by about 30 points and kick 7 to 10 goals.
I actually think they're having a bit of a crack, Ben. They just don't have blokes who can do it. And to me, if you're having a crack, the coach is actually getting a fair bit out of the squad. It's just the list management has been ordinary, and clearly so has the development coaching, because they're not developing these players that were drafted high.
So if the players aren't there, why is the board, and this is reportedly, why is the board meeting last week and still being steadfast in its view that they have a team and a list that is capable of finishing in the top four? Is that correct?
I think this has been completely misreported by everyone.
Right.
So the plan... The road to 2018 was that they'd be top four by 2018. That was the plan.
Yep.
Now, I think they should deviate from that. I think they should say that plan's over, but they haven't. So it's up. So Peter Summers has every right to say at the start of the year, we thought we'd be a top four team based on that plan. Now, at the moment, they're clearly nowhere near that. So he should come out, instead of saying we thought we'd be this, he should come out and say, that plan probably hasn't worked. Let's start a new one, let's go again.
Yeah. I think if he's saying we think we can still be a top four team with this list.
I don't think he's actually saying that. I thought he said that is what we thought we could be at the start of the year. And I think we all thought that was a massive overestimation. Yes. I thought that'd maybe be 7th or 8th at the best, but more likely 9, 10, 11, 12.
So is that just being stubborn and sticking to the road to 2018 plan, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was a clumsy quote that has been misinterpreted even further by a lot of people, because they're not aware of this road to 2018 strategic plan that Paul Roos spoke about on the couch a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he did mention
that. And the road to 2018 plan was always going to be difficult, because they needed to land a big fish, and they haven't landed a big fish. And without landing a big fish and losing a couple of other whales in Nick Riewoldt and Lee Montagna, it's very difficult to then stay afloat.
That's an interesting analogy from you, Thomas.
But you know what I'm saying, though.
You would even
none of that. The interesting thing for me about St Kilda is, how do they get someone in the club now? 2 years ago, they were far more attractive for a prospective free agent than they are now.
So Rory Sloane, for instance.
Oh, well, good luck to get it. Seriously, good luck getting a bloke who's in his late 20s to a club who's not going to be winning a flag anytime soon. It's a really difficult sell.
The Luke Dalhouse contract situation, and that Geelong might be preparing to throw their hat in the ring.
Yeah, Geelong have been watching him for quite a while now. And
Geelong Falcons boy?
Geelong Falcons boy, Leopold, second cousin of Patrick Dangerfield, but a lot closer than a second cousin would normally be. Yes. Their mums are good friends. That's all by the by, because the really interesting thing, I think, about the Luke Dalhouse situation is that he's an unrestricted free agent. And you think, well, how can that be at the moment? His contract is so front-ended in 2016 and 2017, that by the time 2018 came around, he wasn't in the top 25% of players paid by the Bulldogs. And that's because the Bulldogs needed to pay Tom Boyd to get to the club. So by virtue of that, Dalhouse is now an unrestricted free agent because he's not highly paid by the Dogs
Which
at all.
Which means he can walk to Geelong and
anywhere he wants.
And the Bulldogs don't have to or can't match the offer.
Now, there is no suggestion that he wants to go.
Of course.
There is no suggestion that the Bulldogs want him to go now, but he was floated last year, and with Libba, also an unrestricted free agent, Mitch Wallace, a free agent. They've got Jordan Ruffhead and Dale Morris, who's not going to go, probably retire. They've got a few balls in the air at the moment, the Bulldogs, and then it's sort out because they could end up losing a couple of very valuable players.
It's just another bit of questionable list management from them. We've seen some confusing stuff since the Premiership, and now having it structured in that way, surely you would foresee that. Surely you would have on chart somewhere in the Bulldogs' offices your pay scale and who's going to be in the top 25%, and you could map that sort of thing out.
Or maybe they just really don't mind losing him. He's not an amazing kick. He does work hard, put on good pressure, but he's not having a great year. His stats are down, and he played 22 games last year and didn't finish in the top 10 of the best and fairest for a club that didn't make the top 8. He didn't have a good year last year at all, so I wonder whether the Dogs wouldn't mind losing him and getting some mid-rank compensation.
Does he make any sense for Geelong, Benny?
Probably not. I don't think so.
Do they need some more pressure, though? Does he offset... If he plays half-forward, does he offset a Daniel Menzel who doesn't enjoy tackling too much?
Yeah, no, I like Menzel on the team. I've always been a Daniel Menzel fan. But like, I think Dalhaus is a guy who might be able to help out defensively in the midfield more than anything else. Yeah. So much talk about Scott Selwood and how important he is to that on-ball group. Maybe he makes sense in that side of things, but at his best, Dalhaus is a ball winner himself as well, a big contested ball animal. So
in 2015 he was in the All-Australian squad. 2016 he was a very important player and a flag. He was on the way up, but his 2017 and the first half of 2018 has been underwhelming. I just wonder why. Maybe things aren't just quite working for him there. Watch this space.
Yes, we will, with plenty of interest, no doubt, Thomas. We'll watch this space because you mentioned the first couple of months, and now we just sort of, I think, the storylines in the media start to turn in terms. We see a lot more contract stories out in the media at the moment. And it's a good weekend for guys who are out of contract. We've already talked about Jordan Ngoi. Mm. We've briefly touched on Tom McDonald. Jake Lloyd's out of contract at the end of the year and was arguably best on ground against the Dockers on Saturday night. And then the two Eagles, Andrew Gaff and Jeremy McGovern.
Gaff is the one that interests me most, Ben, here. Yeah. Every week his price is going up. He uses the ball well. He's no longer, I think, just a little link player who can find the footy. He's actually become a really, really important driving player for West Coast. And the stats would show that. If you speak to Glenn Luff from Champion Data, who wasn't a fan, but is liking his work this year.
Because he's gone more inside.
He went for Melbourne as a kid. St Kilda has the money. If you say, I mean, very interesting. I think there's probably 10 clubs that are all have varying levels of interest for Andrew Gaff.
Sure.
That'd be negligent in their duties if they weren't interested at all. But I think Melbourne is the front runner at the moment.
I'm loving how he's addressing the situation every time he's asked in the media. Like, he was asked about it three times yesterday across three different platforms, including an all-in press conference. Mm. And it's almost like lackadaisical and very casual about how he's addressing his contract situation. Will work it out towards the end of the year. It's not awkward. There's no sense of awkwardness about it. He's very up.
He's a very relaxed customer.
And same with McGovern as well. Both players from the Eagles have a very similar approach.
You're saying he's not quite the Adelaide players going on Adelaide radio? And
no.
I feel like every single time.
That's more confrontational, isn't it?
That always happens. They go on 5-8. Mapping it out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I love Adelaide.
There's something happening. I love churches.
I love
Adelaide
the tram.
Adelaide Oval is a terrific place. I think something is happening in Adelaide. Brett Burton's response that he would be offended of the suggestions that they have been lying about injuries is bizarre, because they clearly have bent the truth on a number of occasions. Now, I think all clubs do this. I think Brett Burton would have been better off saying, hey, we're just one of 18 clubs who probably doesn't tell the 100% truth all the time. Yep. And that's because our number one priority is to make sure our players are protected.
Yeah.
But instead, he went on the offensive, and I think it didn't turn out too well for him.
Well, we've got our first bye weekend coming up this weekend, because the Suns and the Power have their bye after the Shanghai extravaganza.
That's a shame.
So we turn our attention to Friday night, and this is my favourite segment, the tips and the cups ahead of the weekend. So Collingwood and the Bulldogs playing for the Tom Young
Why
Cup.
Is it this is second favourite segment?
No. Sorry.
It's Australia's favourite segment. Yeah, he excludes himself from Australia.
I actually think, despite the fact we just talked down the Bulldogs, I think the Bulldogs have a chance here. I think Collingwood might be due just for an ordinary one. I'm still going to tip Collingwood, but I'm not discounting the Bulldogs.
They were not impressive against St Kilda, the Magpies.
No, they weren't, no. And the Bulldogs kicked 2 goals, 14 against Adelaide in the wet. I just reckon there's something brewing here for the Dogs against the Pies.
It's a genuine gut feeling, Thomas.
Yeah, it's a gut feeling. Yes. Based maybe on the rebound effect, I'm not sure.
Ooh.
But it does suit that theorem, that guideline we've spoken about in the past.
No, the Dogs are crap.
So you don't rate them here?
No.
No, I think even before last week, their wins over Gold Coast and Brisbane were far from convincing. So I think the Pies for mine. Richmond and St Kilda for the Stephen Ziller Cup. Could have easily been for Adam Pattinson Cup.
Aaron Fiora,
of course. Yeah, yeah. Great Richmond and St Kilda servants.
So that Geelong-Brisbane game, 1992, what was the greatest winning margin in footy history?
Oh, 200-something.
200-something? Yeah. I reckon that's in play here.
You reckon it's in play?
No, it's not.
Richmond at the MCG a week after losing.
Max, 20 minutes ago, you were just saying that St Kilda, you know exactly what you're going to get every week, between 7 and 10 goals and a 27 to 40
point
loss.
Yeah, so Richmond's going to kick between 30 and 33.
Nah. This is going to be...
Not really, but they're going to pump them.
This is between 55 and 65 points and no more and no less.
From a dart.
Probably not for name a game, maybe.
Yeah, no, I won't be watching this one back.
That's ending soon.
Is it really?
Yes.
You're kidding.
Name a game, is it? You can't get you won't be able to get the DVDs anymore.
What's a DVD?
Exactly. Yeah, maybe that's why Name a Game is
there. Yeah. Thomas to show Gen Z probably. Brisbane and Sydney for the Craig Bolton Cup. Of course, a servant of both clubs. The Lions, what a wonderful win it was last weekend.
A bit like Carlton, they're not good enough to win two in a row. If they'd lost last week I'd actually be tempted here.
Even at the Gabba?
Yeah, well, even at the Gabba, but I think the Swans just know how to get it done. Mm. And this is a Swans victory in my book, Maxie.
I definitely think the Swans win, but I am really wary of the Swans. Like, that Freo, like, yeah, they pump,
wary them in a negative or positive way?
Negative.
You don't trust them.
They pumped Freo for sure, but I'd still like to see them. They've got a really easy run of fixturing over the next 3 weeks or so. I'd really like to see them try and work out exactly how they play their forward line. It's still the eternal issue for them.
Yeah.
Buddy was good, and they had a big spread of goal kickers against Freo, at least.
Yeah, they're a funny side, aren't they? Because they beat Hawthorn a couple of weeks ago. That was super impressive.
They'll be around the mark. They're going to be around the mark.
Well, yes, but we knew that coming into the season. We've learned nothing about them, essentially, this season.
No, they are on parity. They haven't gone up or down. They're just where they are. And in the end, it becomes how fit they are and how well they're playing in September.
Is it unfair to call that win over Hawthorn a fluke? I mean, Ben Ronk's not going to kick 7 every week.
That's the worst thing. I don't mind that.
No, that's completely unfair. That is a farcical comment. they fluked to win over Hawthorn.
Well, it's a fluke in that you do not design your forward structures around Ronk kicking 7 goals.
You have a forward who's wearing a Swans jumper kick 7, and he doesn't do it because he's no good. He does it because he can play. Ben Ronk's a good player.
But you play that game 10 times, he does not kick 7 goals every time.
No, but it doesn't mean it's not a fluke. The Swans are good.
I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying that in itself is a fluky nature, and therefore they were enabled to win because
of it. As Key says, he's got an asterisk next to the Swans. That's a Key terminology. Yeah. Geelong and Carlton
take issue with that comment.
For the David Clark Junior Cup. Of course, David Clark, one of the worst kicks I think I've ever seen in a Geelong
Very
jumper.
Good 800-metre runner from Geelong College.
Yes, no doubt about that. Yeah. And famously kicked the ball to Peter Riccardi against Carlton.
Oh,
the ball was kicked the goal afterwards.
Clearly touched.
And speaking of Geelong and Carlton, they're heading back to GMHBA Stadium, Cadinia Park, for the first time since 1997.
Is that right?
That's exciting.
Why have they not been playing there? Because the crowds have been too boisterous at the MCG or Optus?
Or just for capacity purposes. But now that GMHBA can hold probably close to 40,000 people and we don't have to play the game at Etihad, and GMHBA is looking pretty nice looking stadium if you've been down there. So,
David Clark, thank you for helping a crying Max Lawton at the age of 10 stop crying when Geelong won that game.
Oh, yeah, well done. Yes. The ball was.
I was very upset.
Oh. The ball was touched.
Also, I cried a lot as a kid, so I was a little wimp.
Also, an ugly baby by all accounts.
That's what my girlfriend says. Yes. It's not great.
Listen, not ugly anymore, according to her. Oh. Geelong win this, but I'm fascinated to see how Carlton respond, because Brendan Bolton will not take last week's loss lightly. That was embarrassing what happened, and it will embarrass Bolton. It's embarrassed the club, and they can't afford another heavy defeat along those lines.
Geelong likes losing to bad teams.
They do.
But if they lose to Carlton at GMHBA, fold the club.
I don't think they're losing to Carlton at GMHBA on Saturday night.
No.
After a bad loss.
That's not the structure. It's those Saturday twilight games, particularly I think Gold Coast was a twilight game last year when they lost to them. The Essendon one obviously was.
And I'll be there for this game, Ben.
Oh, we'll be down there. Pack it. Make sure you
pack your thermos. I've got a couple of them. Luckily,
everything.
Ben.
Pack your thermos. Go to Packington Street afterwards.
GWS against Essendon for the Sean Edwards Cup. Of course, a servant of the Sydney Swans as well, Sean Edwards.
Yep.
But there's a couple of James Stewart and Devin Smith coming up against their old sides this weekend as well.
Yeah, GWS win this for exactly the same reason as Carlton couldn't win in round 9. Essendon's not good enough to win 2 in a row.
Right.
And the Giants are not playing good footy. They've got to show something. But I've got no sympathy for the Giants. I really think that they're an ordinary club at the moment.
Club?
Yeah. Well, look at their NEFL form. I think they've lost five on the trot really, of the NEFL. Yeah. A good sign of how
but
strong your club
that's
is.
Injuries.
It is injuries, but they're showing no ticker whatsoever either in their senior team. John Patton, a number one draft pick, is playing in the NEFL. Now, something is going on there.
That's ever since that ad campaign came out about the place kick. Oh, that's really yes. put him off.
Well put together, Budge.
It's a very good campaign. Yes. This is the most interesting game of the round for me.
GWS Essendon?
Yeah.
Are you...
These teams are meeting perfectly where their arcs meet. GWS at the bottom, Essendon at the top. They are as close as they can be.
Venn diagram kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Style.
The overlap is as much as it could possibly be. I'm drawing it in my hands and you can't see it because it's a podcast. Essendon can win this.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think Essendon can win it as well.
Essendon can totally win
this. I'm cynical today about Max. I think I'm off him. No. I just disagree with him. The Giants will win and win easily.
Hawthorn and West Coast. So this game's at Etihad Stadium on Sunday afternoon for Collicker Cup.
Who's that?
Sort of early 2000s, late 1990s.
I would have gone Daniel Chick, but that's fine.
Oh, that's
the nine-finger chicker.
Tom, the trick is... When Ben mentions these players, you pretend you recognise them like I do with almost all of them.
I've actually never heard of Michael Collicker, but that's okay. Hawthorn to win this one, Ben.
Yep.
Hawthorn?
Yeah,
Hawthorn to win this one. You're kidding me, Thomas.
At home.
Sorry, so you're just going to drop that and not explain that.
Well, I think they're going to win at home.
Is this sort of theorem?
No,
it's got nothing to do with theorem.
No, this is West Coast coming down after a very important win last week, and I just don't think they're good enough to keep winning all the time.
Sort of Hawthorn lost to Brisbane, West Coast beat Richmond.
Yeah, and you know that season means this season means that Hawthorn is more likely to win this week. Oh. Do you want to put a bet on it?
Yeah.
What do you want to put, a Coke Zero or something? What do you drink?
Didn't we do that a couple of weeks ago and forgot?
Yeah, we won't forget this.
Oh, double it.
Okay, two.
Okay, I don't drink Cokes. Buy me an orange juice.
Okay, great.
There we go.
West Coast wins.
Not much sugar.
And you had orange juice from the original cafe for the brekkie wrap on Monday morning on Fox
We did.
Footy.
Thanks, Dennis.
Melbourne and Adelaide meet in Alice Springs for the John Meeson James Seller Cup.
Oh, double barrel.
I was going to go, what's his name?
Peter Vardy.
Peter Vardy,
what
yes.
A man.
I was going to go Nathan Vardy, but then I realised that was a Leicester City striker.
Bernard.
Or
Vince.
West Coast Eagles Geelong ruckman Nathan Vardy.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Who's the Leicester City?
Jamie Vardy, sorry.
Potato.
I completely lost
Let's
it.
Call
I think Melbourne win this, but I'm actually not sure. I'm really not sure about this one.
It's a very close game.
Yeah. This is the most interesting game of the week.
This is the game of the round.
Yeah, no. I was interested for weird reasons in GWS Essendon. This is actually the game of the round.
Jake Lever. Yeah.
Adelaide aren't very good right now. Question mark? They won four of their last five. That injury list is more talented than Carlton's fit list.
Yeah, that's not a bad comment. I'm tipping Melbourne, but it's a 51-49 thing, Ben.
Fremantle and North Melbourne round out the round. Now, there is some ripping servants of both clubs. Winston Abraham, Matthew Burton, Spider Burton, Peter Bell, Jess Sinclair, and, of course, Lee Brown, a Collingwood
some
Premiership
great
player.
Great names there. Winston Abraham, Mark of the Year, 98?
Or
at Manuka.
Yes.
I think Matthew Lappin was 99.
Oh,
wasn't he in the point post, round one?
Right. Yeah.
Frio, this is Fremantle's game, but I do like what North Melbourne's doing at the moment. I really enjoy watching the Kangaroos play.
This is the kind of game North Melbourne wins convincingly to show that they're genuinely pushing for top six.
Yes, because Fremantle has been quite good at home.
Yes. Yeah.
And if they want to have any chance, they need to win all of their home games pretty much.
In fact, if there's any team I will watch at the moment, if I'm just sitting on the couch, I would like to watch North Melbourne.
The Roos are good.
I really enjoy watching them.
Covered that game against GWS. They're an impressive side to watch.
Yeah, it's good. But I agree. The Dockers win the Peter Bell Cup.
Yes.
North.
Has there been a player has there ever been a player in the AFL, maybe aside from Adam Uze, who has used their right foot less than Jess Sinclair? Yes, literally, his right leg was for balance and that's it.
Joel Bowden would probably be up there as well, but I didn't mind that from you, actually. Yeah.
Real Zach Gowen WWE type of wrestler with one leg.
Okay.
Zach Gowen.
Can we ever get through a podcast without talking about WWE SmackDown, please?
I believe Fox just got the rights to the show in the USA.
Did we really?
Well, I mean, we still already broadcast on a Foxtel, but I own SmackDown now, basically.
Is Rikishi going to be around?
I wouldn't have thought.
Stinkface, one of the great finishing moves of all time. Nothing stinky about the Fox Footy podcast today. Thank you, gentlemen, for your work, as always.
Thanks, Ben.
And remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.